Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about two Tom Cruise, Tony Scott movies, 1986's Top Gun and 1990's Days of Thunder. Joining me, as always, got my friend and roommate, Pat Miller. Pat, how's it going?
Great.
Excellent. You sound like a robot there. Tyler Brands, are also kind of trusty co-host, the goose to my maverick. How you doing, sir?
Oh, Ben, I'm going to announce it right now. This is my last podcast before I join the Navy. After watching Top Gun, man, I just went out and signed up.
Nice, yes. I was doing a little bit of research about the movie.
Sorry, ladies.
And I was doing a little bit of research about the movie and saw that there was a 500% increase in naval whatever recruitment rates after Top Gun came out. So
yeah, even if you are making that up, I believe you.
No, I'm dead serious. Well, that's what Wikipedia says anyway, as much as that can be believed. But
recite your sources if they're unreliable.
Right, yeah. So for those of you who are just joining us for the first time, we like to start off the podcast with a little thing we started called the Character Name Game. And I believe it's my turn this week. So for the uninitiated, the way we play this game is I, this week, will name a character from a movie, and then the other members of the panel has to guess what movie that character is from, and the guesses will come at the very end of the show. So,
is that how you play it?
Yes, it is. So this week, the character's name is Ivy Walker.
Huh.
Ivy Walker. So, also, I'll give you guys a little bit of a hint because I was thinking about this earlier. I think the character name game needs to somewhat have a connection, as tenuous as it may be, to a new release that's coming out this particular week, or this past Friday. So just to give you a small hint, there is a thread of connection between the character of Ivy Walker and a movie that came out this week. I'm not going to tell you which one
until
the very end. So.
So when you mean connection, you don't mean she was in the movie, but
no.
Somewhere the movie she or he were in has a connection to a movie that came out this weekend.
Right, in some capacity. Yeah.
And is that just this name, or is that going to be names following? Is
that
a new
rule? I think we should implement that as like a new thing for the character name game. So
all right, works.
Just to kind of narrow it down, and then it'll be half the fun. We'll be guessing what the connection is afterwards too. So
is it buried?
It is not. Barry doesn't come out yet until the 24th, I think. So, all right. So, in any case, well, let's move on to the media consume section. This is the part where we talk about recent TV that we've been watching and kind of events that we've gone to, concerts we've seen, video games we've played, things of that sort. So, Pat, why don't we start with you? What have you been consuming lately?
Well, I think what I wanted to talk about was the ending, I guess the season finale of No Reservations. And the way that they do it, I kind of get confused with cable, quote, seasons, because they started this season, I'm looking, in January of this year. And they went to April, and then they started up again in July. So I'm not going to review the part that was from January to April. I'm just talking about, for this podcast, July until
September,
just last week, September. So basically, I just wanted to say that this was a pretty good season. I was just kind of reviewing the past episodes that I went through. And normally, I kind of gauge it by, like, you know, if it's over 50% of the episodes were good, it's a good season. At least the second half, you know. Once again, that's all we're talking about.
Right,
So, I'm just going to name the episodes I thought were good. We've got Caribbean Island Hopping. Check that out. Once again, I think I talked about this on the podcast a while ago. The episode is called Where It All Began, which is the one where Tony kind of shows how he got his roots as where he is now. Dubai was good. Rome was good. They did a good episode where they go to Beirut in like some of the earlier seasons, but they end up Beirut is in, I think, Lebanon or Jordan, one of the two. And what happens is it's invaded. It's in Lebanon. Okay. what happens is that there's some like fighting between like some groups there, and so they end up having to be evacuated from the country. And this was like 3 or 4 years ago, so it's just kind of cool. They go back and revisit like everything they would have done had the invasion not occurred. So that's a good one. Then they do like a rare making of episode in which they kind of revisit. They go to India earlier in the season, which I didn't think that was that spectacular of an episode. But ironically enough, the making of episode is better than the actual episode. And then they have their 100th episode, which I thought was pretty cool. And that kind of is just like, you know, their author's choice, if you'll call it, of like kind of their favorite moments.
Like a clip show.
Yeah, it's like a clip show, but it's more like their insight on how the show has evolved. Obviously, you know, it has clip show elements throughout. It's definitely a clip show, but it's more of a
like charting the progress of the series. Yeah. Cool.
And then so last week they ended with Madrid, and Tony got there right after Spain had won the World Cup, so that was, you know, that was pretty cool to see. So overall, it was a pretty good season.
Nice. All right, Tyler, how about you? What have you been consuming lately?
Well, this week I've been burning through episodes of season one of Archer. You've seen all those episodes, right?
I have. It's really hilarious.
Yeah, they're like 20 minutes each. There's only 10 of them, so you can get it done in like a good, I don't know, 3 hours if you really punch it. But yeah, I've been watching those like back to back, and they're really awesome. Like, I love the animation, I love the jokes, just the subtle nuances they throw in there of, like, you know, some of the characters will try to burn another character, but they'll just mess up, and so they'll just be like, yeah, whatever, you know, like, it's as if the writers are trying to make jokes, but they can't come up with it, so they just kind of write in that, and it's funny.
Yeah.
So check that out if you haven't. It doesn't come back. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia premiere and the league premiere this week. They were already advertising for Archer in January.
Yeah.
So you can tell how much they're trying to push it, because it's really good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of ironic to me that they're pushing it that hard with the advertisements now, you know, midway through September. But it was their choice to kick it all the way back to January of next year. So if they're wanting people to watch it, it must be that they're trying to build good word of mouth or something. Maybe their numbers weren't as great as they were hoping. And then they are hoping to maybe attract that same audience from the league and It's Always Sunny when they actually get back started in January.
Well, I remember last season, they were pushing Archer pretty hard. I remember seeing Archer previews, or whatever you want to call them, TV spots, way back in like October for a show in January. I was like, what the heck? Why are you advertising so soon?
Yeah.
So maybe they just thought, yeah, a new show no one knows about, we'll just start talking about it and get inside your brain for 3 months.
Yeah, maybe that's just like an FX marketing strategy.
Yeah. Drill it into our minds. The other thing I wanted to talk about this week is video game related, and I haven't played this game in a really long time, but it's just been on my mind about how much fun it was, but how much grief I've given it through the years. The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker. Have you ever played it?
No, is that the GameCube version?
Yeah.
Yes, that was one of the GameCube games. The other one was Twilight Princess, but that one was good. Well, this one's good too. And it was just like thinking this week and last week, and just remembering how much fun it was to play and how good it looked, and how calming it was to play it. And I really have given it a bad rep on my blog and when I talk to people about it, because it looks cartoony and it's gay and it's really not worth your time. But I've changed my ways. And if you have a GameCube or a Wii, I suggest you go out and buy it, or I guess that's the only way to get it, because I don't think it's available on the Wii network to download, because it's such a recent game, like a GameCube game. So go out and buy it. It's probably like $20 at EB or whatever that place is called now, and just check it out. And if you don't like it, you can come back and talk to me and yell at me, and I'll tell you to walk away.
Right on.
Something that I've never figured out in regards to Zelda is, it has such like a loyal fan base. I feel like, why haven't they tried, or maybe they have tried, but why aren't there Zelda movies? You know, like,
I don't know. I
just feel like there's so much story there, and it's kind of like a popular genre.
If Super Mario Brothers got made into a live-action movie, then Zelda probably
should. You know, and yeah, it's not like worse franchises have been made into movies, so that's
true.
My prediction in the next 10 years, you'll see a Zelda movie.
Man, I don't know, because they even say the games don't really have any connections with each other.
Yeah.
So what would the movie, it would just be a retelling of the same story.
Yeah, maybe so they maybe, could rewrite yeah. something. I don't know.
Yeah.
There was a trailer like for April Fool's either last year or the year before. You remember that, Tyler?
I got fooled.
Yeah.
This was before I knew that trailers came out on the internet, like you could see. So when I saw it on YouTube, I was like, holy crap, are they making this? And I got all excited, and then I realized and read up on it that it was not real. Pat, you make a good point, because I've always said that Castlevania should have been made into a movie like 20 years ago. But yeah, it's from like 1987.
Yeah.
It has a really tough cult following. I know there's a new game coming out that's like rebooting the whole franchise, and it's supposed to be a lot like the Elder Scrolls 4. I don't know if you guys have ever played that, but it looks very similar to that. Patrick Stewart voices a character, and as he does in Elder Scrolls as well. It might be the same people, but yeah, I think you're right, Pat. I think in the next couple years or so, we're going to see those reemergence of those franchises in movie form and whatever, comic books and whatnot.
Cool. Oh, you got anything else, Tyler?
No, that's it. What have you been consuming, Benjamin?
Well, you know, as Pat pointed out before we started recording, we haven't really been watching a lot lately this week because all of the new stuff is going to be coming out this week. We're recording this right now on September 19th, which is a Sunday, and all of the new shows, most of the new shows, are going to start premiering and stuff this coming week. So in the weeks to come, we will have a lot more TV to talk about. But one thing that I did want to mention, just because it's kind of a cool experience that we had, we got to see a screening of Ben Affleck's The Town, the new movie that he stars in and directed. And we got the invite to go see it at the Directors Guild of America, which is this really cool building in Hollywood, where I tried to go in once and they basically kicked me out because I wasn't supposed to be there. Like, they wouldn't even let me go in the lobby to look around at all. They're like, do you have permission to be here? And I was like, no. They're like, all right. Yeah. So this screening was actually the first time that we had a chance to go in there. And it was really cool because we got in. It's a super nice theater. Everybody was, like, well-dressed and all this stuff. You know, this is one of the few screenings, actually the only one that I've ever got an invite to that gave, like, a dress code. And then so we got to go in there. And then Ben Affleck came out and introduced the movie. He was, like, talking to everybody, thanking everybody for showing up. And, like, he introduced some of his producers. And he brought Jeremy Renner out on stage as well. Who also co-stars in the movie. And then, just kind of introduced it. He mentioned that Titus Welliver was in the audience, who played the Man in Black in Lost. And he kind of stood up and waved to everybody. And we all just kind of like sat there and watched the movie. And at the reception afterwards, they had all this like finger food and, you know, kind of wine and everything. And we saw Kevin Smith, the director of Clerks and Chasing Amy and all that stuff, just kind of hanging out in the lobby because, you know, as any Kevin Smith fan knows, he's a good friend of Ben Affleck's. So, you know, I don't want to use this media consumed as like a platform for talking about movies, because the whole point of it is kind of talking about stuff other than movies. But I will say that I enjoyed The Town. I like the movie. And I wrote a review of it at filmonic.com, so you can check that out there. And Pat, you liked it as well, right?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Right. You can check my review out at geektyrant.com.
Nice. Okay. Well, yeah, let's go ahead and with that, move on into our discussion of Top Gun and Days of Thunder. So,
Danger Zone!
Yeah, I'm going to, by the way, if you're listening to this, you will have heard that we opened the show with Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone this week.
That's hot shit, son.
So, Pat, what did you think of Top Gun? I know it's been a little while since you've seen this, and you caught the kind of the last half of it as we were watching it earlier. But
I like Top Gun, but it just seems like there are people who like it a lot more than me. I guess that would mean I think it's overrated. If I'm going by kind of their opinion of it, like it's just. I don't know. Like, it's just not as good as people think it is. It's not bad. It's a good movie. But it's kind of, yeah, just overrated. Like, Tom Cruise is good in it. But, you know, he's kind of a baby at sometimes. I don't know. Maybe I just don't like his character as much as everybody else does. But I don't know. I just feel like there's like a choppiness maybe to it. Basically, all that I'm saying is kind of will be more exaggerated when we get to the Days of Thunder review. But yeah, so it's kind of hard to do it in reverse to like a lesser extent.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely if you haven't seen it, go see it. The me and Ben were talking about this, like kind of the color schemes that Tony Scott uses and the dramatic like wide shots with the high contrast and like the red gel or whatever filter, whatever that would be on the camera. Those are always like very iconic and like the silhouetted jets shots at sunset or sunrise, whichever. Those are always pretty cool to see. And you know, I've heard like, you know, the Navy, if the footage is pretty cool of the dogfights and stuff, but you could tell that they're kind of limited because you can see some repeated shots in there. And then I think from what I've heard is like the Navy just kind of put a limit to what they could shoot. Like they can only show like one missile being shot from the jet and like just stuff like that. But overall, I probably just don't like it as much as everybody else.
All right, that's a fair assessment, I think. Tyler, what about you? What do you think?
Well, we can now get rooted back to how Tom Cruise got his hyper egomania in check. This movie and Days of Thunder, Top Gun, like portrayed Cruise as like this superhuman, awesome guy. I mean, rolling up in the motorcycle in both movies and just all this stuff that you're like, oh, wow, you wouldn't see that today because, you know, well, I guess you might, but it was just blatant, like, hey, look, it's Tom Cruise. This is what you paid money to see. As far as Top Gun, though, I thought it was, yeah, I mean, the dogfights were pretty good, but they were limited because, you know, you didn't really see what they were doing. You couldn't see, like, a expansive shot where you saw planes, like, following each other. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The dogfight was implied. But you really didn't see like a camera on top of a plane following. Well, you did, but not to the point where you saw the movements of both the enemy and the fighter pilots.
What are you talking about? I saw that the whole time. That's like my favorite part of the movie is the aerial footage. I thought they did an awesome job.
Well, no, the aerial footage is good, but you don't really see like the actual fight, like two planes in front of each other and the other one firing at it. You see the plane shooting guns, and then the next scene you'll see the other plane getting shot.
Well, that's because they didn't actually destroy a real plane in the making of the movie.
That's what I want to see. I want to see like a robot plane getting shot down into a mountain. that was just kind of a thing that I kept thinking about. Other than like the characters were kind of, I'll say, two-dimensional. Is that a good? It's like a word there. I don't want to say one-dimensional because Iceman kind of changes his ways and Maverick kind of changes his ways. But the characters were pretty much established at the beginning of the movie, which I like. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Top Gun.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions?
I mean, not particularly. Not yet, anyway. I think just as far as my thoughts, like Top Gun has been a movie that I've been watching, you know, since I can remember, basically, since I was, you know, 10 or 12 years old or something. I've seen it countless times. It had been a couple years since I'd seen it. So getting, like, rewatching it with a little bit more of a critical eye was kind of a fun thing for me. Although I really couldn't find that many negative things to say about it, just because it's so, like, it embraces what it is to such a high degree, and it's basically just like a training video for the Navy with like badass stuff going on, and it's like that's totally what the kind of feel of it and what, you know, the way everything is portrayed, that's clearly what they're trying to do, is just like make this Americana, like, yeah, go USA type of patriotic action movie. And it's like so 80s with the way that those kinds of themes play out through it. It's very like good and evil are very distinguished and deliberate. There's no anti-hero stuff going on. It's like Pete Mitchell is kind of, you know, they make reference multiple times to the fact that he's dangerous, but he's never like going to,
damn it, but you're the best in the Navy.
He's never gonna actually endanger on purpose his fellow people. Like, that was something that I kind of had a problem with, is that, you know, what's his name, Tom Kazansky, right? That's Iceman. That's Val Kilmer.
Yeah, just call him by their code names.
Okay, ice. All right, Iceman. Iceman says that Maverick is dangerous a couple different times in the movie, and he, you know, everybody kind of berates him for leaving his wingman in that one training scene. But the problem that I had with that is, in the very beginning of the movie, Cougar is, you know, kind of freaked out by that whole MIG encounter in that really awesome opening scene. And,
yeah,
you know, Maverick goes back to land on the carrier and then realizes that Cougar's in trouble. So he pulls up at the last second and basically guides him back in and, you know, essentially kind of potentially saves his life. Maybe, who knows if they would have ran out of gas and if like a goose situation would have happened with the bailout or whatever with that. But it's like Maverick didn't leave his wingman at that point. Like, he went back and saved Cougar in the very beginning. And then later on, he decides to, it's just, he gets caught up in the heat of the competition of trying to outdo Iceman, which is why he,
that's why he fails.
Yeah, basically. So, but you know, getting back to kind of the thing I was talking about, it's like, they're very pure characters. Like, yeah, they have a little bit of edge to them or whatever, but for the most part, these are good guys. Like, they're not going to, you know, it's not like a Clint Eastwood movie where you'll have, you know, a streak of darkness running through it, where like Goose is an alcoholic who beats his wife or something, you know. Like, there's, and especially the character of Goose is just like so impossible to hate. Like, he's just right, such a happy-go-lucky, like playing Great Balls of Fire on the piano and goofing around all the time and like cutting people down and like, oh, there's two O's in Goose, boys. Like, he's got so many lines, like the finger, I hate it when it does that. Like, every, you know, everything Goose says in this movie is gold. But so, you know, that's my, if I have a problem with the movie, it's that maybe the characters are a bit kind of like what you're talking about,
just too perfect,
two-dimensional. Yeah, but that's not really a problem. That's not really an issue for me. It's just because the movie knows exactly what it is and just plays to those strengths so well.
There were some cheesy parts, though. We can't get past that.
Yeah. It's like, it's a little scene, but it embraces it, I feel like, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
What scene are you talking about, Tyler?
The bar scene, and there are a couple other cheesy scenes where they're just like so happy and you're like, oh, wait, how can you be that happy? Oh, that's right, you're awesome.
The part
you're a fucking jet fighter and you get all the girls.
The part that I think about is when I forgot how the dialogue goes, but Iceman just does like an exaggerated like chomping of his gum in his face or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like, that's ridiculous.
He just ends the conversation with that. Like, I think he's gonna say something, and he's just like,
it's cool, but it's ridiculous at the same time.
Yeah,
I think it's because up until that point, I mean, that was setting the standards for, I don't know, I don't want to say cheesy, but like, that might have been like pretty normal to see that, or pretty cool to see those guys acting like that. But now, you know, 20 years later, where we see, you know, we've seen, you know, 20 years worth of movies, and we're just like, oh, that movies wouldn't do that now, or, you know, something like that. But
yeah,
if we had seen this back in 1986, we probably would have been like, went and bought leather jackets the same day and like show up to school with like patches all over them and be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna join the Navy, man.
Yeah. That's
but it's awesome.
Yeah, another thing that I was reading about is that the sale of bomber jackets and Ray-Ban sunglasses increased dramatically after this movie came out. So a lot of people did exactly what you just said, Tyler. But,
I need a good pair of aviators now.
Yeah. What did you guys think about Meg Ryan? She had a very small role, but what were your thoughts about her?
Pretty worthless. I mean, I guess you needed somebody to react emotionally to Goose's death. Otherwise, it would have just been Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I thought she was just blatant emotional manipulation, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she came in, and she, like, that fake, terrible Southern accent, then where she's, like, hyper-annoying, and then she starts drinking, so she's loud, too. We've all met people like that, but we don't want to see them in film. The kid... obviously useless because he doesn't say anything. He's just more of a motive to say, oh, Goose left so much behind. Even like the doctor, or she wasn't a doctor. That was the other movie. The the flight instructor, or the planes, or whatever she was. She was like the government liaison from the Pentagon. Her character, I guess, was pretty integral, but, you know, she played it pretty flat.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot going on there. Obviously,
we needed a love interest, and that just happened to be Terry McGillis.
Kelly McGillis, yeah.
That's what I said. Kelly McTurris.
There was, like, their love scene I found extraordinarily uncomfortable to watch. I don't know
about... Any love scene to Berlin is uncomfortable.
Any love scene what?
To Berlin is uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. but they're, like, you know... Pat's talking about kind of Tony Scott's visual style with the lighting and the silhouettes and stuff, and it's like,
yeah,
he shot them having sex in the same way he shot planes taking off at the beginning. It's very and like the things that they actually were doing with just struck me as kind of like, oh wow, that is unnecessary. Like it was just really awkward.
Like Team America or the puppets?
Yeah, kind of. And that's what that movie, that's what Team America, that's why I love that movie, is because it satirizes all the kind of Jerry Bruckheimer style productions and stuff that came out of the 80s and 90s. But
the one thing I kind of felt was a little played was like they used the same three songs for every type of scene that was on film. Okay, so the planes are going off. We have the, Danger Zone song. If we're on the Navy base and on the aircraft carrier and, you know, there's a decision to be made or something's going awry, we have that, the Giordo, whatever, the composer's Top Gun theme. But if we have a love romantic scene, we have Berlin playing in the background. And, like, they didn't use it just once in the movie. They used them multiple times, especially the Berlin song during the love scenes or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, anytime they would appear, those two characters would appear, it would slowly
and you're like, oh, something's going to happen. We know it's like those telltale musics in like the old movies where you know, you can hear that something bad's going to happen, or you can hear when, you know, a girl is going to come on the scene. It was just like you could predict what was going to happen in the scene. You're like, oh, there's a big decision to be made. And it's like,
okay, so I want to play you guys a clip from, there's a movie and it's called, I don't recall what the name of the movie is, but I will, I want to play you guys this clip. It's a, Quentin Tarantino gives this monologue about what he thinks Top Gun is about in this movie. So I will play this clip for you guys and then we'll come back and talk about it.
You know what one of the greatest fucking scripts ever written in the history of Hollywood is?
What?
Top Gun.
Come on.
Top Gun is fucking great. What is Top Gun? You think it's a story about a bunch of fighter pilots?
Yeah, it's about a bunch of guys waving their dicks around.
It is a story about a man's struggle with his own homosexuality. That's it. That is what Top Gun is about, man. You've got Maverick, all right? He's on the edge, man. He's right on the fucking line, all right? And you've got Iceman and all his crew.
Right.
They're gay. And they represent the gay man,
right?
All right? And they're saying, Go the gay way. He could go both ways.
What about Kelly McGillis, right?
Kelly McGillis, she's heterosexuality. She's saying, no. Go the normal way. Play by the rules, go the normal way. And they're saying, no, go the gay way. Be the gay way. Go for the gay way. Right? That is what's going on throughout that whole movie. He goes to her house, right? All right? It looks like they're going to have sex. You know, they're just kind of sitting back. He's taking a shower and everything. They don't have sex. He gets on the motorcycle, drives away. She's like, what the fuck is going on here?
Right.
Next scene you see her, she's in the elevator, she is dressed like a guy. She's got the cap on, she's got the aviator glasses, she's wearing the same jacket. that the Iceman wears. Jeez, okay. This is how I gotta get this guy. This guy's going towards the gay way. So I gotta bring him back. I gotta bring him back from the gay way. So I'm gonna do that through subterfuge. I'm gonna dress like a man. All right? That is how she approaches it.
Right.
Okay. All right, but the real ending of the movie is when they fight the mix at the end. All right, because he has passed over into the gay way. They are this gay fighting fucking force, all right? And they're beating the Russians. The gays are beating the Russians, all right? And it's over, and they fucking land. And Iceman's been trying to get Maverick the entire time. Finally, he's got him. All right, and what is the last fucking line that they have together? They're all hugging and kissing and happy with each other. And Ice comes up to Maverick, and he says, man, you can ride my tail anytime. Yes! And what does Maverick say? Maverick, you can ride my sword fight.
So that was a clip from the movie. It was called Sleep With Me, and that was a little monologue by Quentin Tarantino. What were you? What are your thoughts about that, guys? Tyler, what did you think?
I just want to slap Quentin Tarantino in the face, but that was pretty funny.
Pat, what do you think?
I mean, I can see how there's some sort of logical pattern. Like, yeah, that's a logical argument that can be made. I feel like if you just got any sort of opposing sides, you could make the argument like Kelly McGillis's like conformity and the other guys are whatever.
Like rebellion?
Yeah. And, I mean, his argument's kind of flawed in that unless...
He's a douchebag.
Unless you're making the argument towards him being bisexual, because he gets with Kelly McGillis at the end of the movie. So he's a Top Gun fighter, the, quote, gay side, but he's also with Kelly McGillis at the end of the movie. So,
well, what if they invite Ice over later that we don't see?
Well, no, the interesting thing about that is that on a movie like this, how would you expect it to end? Especially with the very final scene of this movie. She comes into the bar, she plays the song, they go through their little lovey-dovey rehash of the same lines that they had before, and they come together and you're expecting this kind of slow motion kiss, right? Like, that's what happens in these movies. This movie, I noticed this time, which is the first time I've seen Top Gun since seeing this clip, so I was watching it with that kind of context in mind. This movie ends before they actually kiss at the very end. So it's like, I don't know. Maybe he's on to something there, especially considering the fact that her, like Tyler was saying, she's a civilian contractor for the Pentagon or whatever, but she has a call sign just like the rest of them, and her call sign is Charlie, which obviously is a dude's
name.
Oh
my gosh. You guys.
I'm just saying, like,
if they really wanted to, couldn't they have just ended it on the aircraft carrier or something? Or, like, as he's throwing Goose's tags into the ocean? Like, you could end it there,
And which would be even more probably... I see what you're saying. Yeah, because that would make it even more quote unquote gay.
Yeah,
like, because
yeah,
it doesn't go back and kind of tie up the Kelly McGillis thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I see
they're not gay, man. They're just playing with the boys.
Okay, thank you, Brands. That freaking volleyball scene. Tell me that's not one of the gayest the gayest things you've seen in mainstream cinema.
Dude, we've all played 2-on-2 volleyball in a beach setting. Nothing gay about it. It's tough, man.
I'm saying the way.
Sweaty. Your
the way that,
flex. There's nothing gay about it.
The way that the camera, like, lingers on... I'm just saying. I'm throwing
Maybe
that
they
out
were female camera women. Who knows?
All right.
I'm not going to go and just accuse this movie of being gay. Well, I mean, any movie with two guys working together, is that all of a sudden gay? I mean, if you look at this ending and compare it to the ending to Star Wars, where almost the same exact thing happens, well, not really, but you have Han Solo and you have Luke Skywalker, and they both come back and they have the scene where Luke comes out of the X-Wing and Han Solo's there, and then Princess Leia shows up, and they're all like, 3-on-3 going back to the, wherever, the throne room. I mean, it's almost the exact back ending. Are you going to call Han Solo and Luke Skywalker gay?
I think
no. That
movie is a little different because it has two other films as sequels that establish the character. And
well, let's just say those sequels don't exist. We just have Star Wars.
Okay, then I would say that, yeah, you have to consider the fact that there might be some sort of homoerotic subtext going on.
You got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you.
Everyone needs that other soldier in battle to help them out. You can't always bring the lady along.
No, I'm well aware of that. I'm just saying there are there are other levels to movies besides what's just on the surface, and I think this clip is actually a pretty decent breakdown of a way that you could, like, academically read this movie. Like, people write thesis papers about the kind of subversive elements of movies like this all the time. So it's not something that's completely... I feel like, Tyler, you're not giving this notion any credit whatsoever. And I think whether or not we agree with it, it probably deserves to have a little bit of credibility thrown its way.
I mean, if I saw a thesis on it, I might take it seriously. But it was just kind of a clip from a movie that I'm sure Tarantino just wrote in, or whoever wrote the movie, to kind of get a laugh or... You know, I mean, obviously they thought about it, but you see what I'm saying?
I guess. I don't see...
I mean, yeah, we could go on all day about how gay Top Gun is, but obviously it's not gay. It's more... It's a Navy movie. It's Navy propaganda. Propaganda, not propaganda.
I don't know. I don't think you can so easily say, obviously it's not gay, but because I think you could just as easily say, obviously it's gay, but all right, we'll just...
Well, he's in the bar by himself. I mean, obviously if it was gay, he'd be at the bar with the other guys.
Okay, well, I'll bring that up. Since you brought that up, I'll bring up a specific line that they say, and this will be the last that I bring this up, because yeah, we could go back and forth with this the whole time.
Is it going to be out of context? Because I don't think I can accept that.
It might be out of context. So there's all right. Super gay bar scene are early on in the movie, right, where Iceman is sitting there with this girl on his shoulder and he's like drinking.
Correct.
and Goose and Maverick come in and they're like, you want to know who's the best? He's the best. Iceman, ice cold,
right.
Calculating, emotionless, blah blah blah,
right?
So then they come over and have this basically kind of interaction that you would expect.
Yeah, a stare down.
That you would expect. Okay, fine. All right. Okay, consider that a stare down. Whatever. There's definitely some sort of tension going on there, whether that's homosexual or not, or whether that's just
that's
number one
brother.
Versus number two type of thing. I'll give you that. But then there's this line, which is clearly a joke on Goose's part. Right after that, they're like, okay, we're gonna loosen up. We're gonna have some fun. It's my turn to make this bet, which apparently there's some history with Maverick and Goose of making bets of whether or not they can get certain women in bars or whatever. So,
right.
So
totally heterosexual.
Right. And until the part where Goose says, okay, you've got to have carnal knowledge of a lady this time. Which is a joke, I'll give you that, but I'm just saying, that's another one of those kind of subversive lines that they threw in to be like, okay, I'll give this counter argument a little bit of credence. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, now here's the question. Are you calling Top Gun gay, or are you calling Tom Cruise gay?
I am not calling either one gay, I'm just saying... I'm just saying that's an
just providing evidence for
right.
something, and we're supposed to draw our own conclusions.
Right. And I'm just saying that the clip that we listened to is not completely ridiculous. That's all I'm.
Because I'm pretty sure Tom Cruise is gay.
I'm not sure.
I don't have any photos or evidence.
I don't know if we can just.
But he has a lot of money.
I think because we're broadcasting to a public forum now, that might be considered slander. So you might just want to be careful about.
I said I think. I'm not saying he is. I'm saying I think he might be.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll leave that.
Top Gun. I don't think it's. I don't think it's gay.
Okay. Well, there's one other kind of interesting piece that I wanted to read from Wikipedia here. And again, I'm citing my source, as Tyler points out, so the credibility of this may be called into question. But there's something that I found interesting, and I'll just read it. It's just one paragraph, so here we go. Renowned aerobatic pilot Art Scholl was hired to do in-flight camera work for the film. The original script called for a flat spin, which Scholl was to perform and capture on a camera on the aircraft. The aircraft was observed to spin through its recovery altitude, at which time he radioed, quote, "I have a problem. I have a real problem." Scholl was unable to recover and crashed his Pitts S2 into the Pacific Ocean off of the Southern California coast near Carlsbad on September 16th, 1985, like during the filming of the movie. Neither Scholl nor his aircraft were recovered, leaving the official cause of the accident unknown. Top Gun was dedicated to the memory of Art Scholl. So that's the end of it. But I just found that like a really ridiculous coincidence, considering that's how freaking Goose dies in the movie, is because Maverick goes through the jet wash and goes into a flat spin and crashes the plane. Like, I don't know. I was just like, really? That really happened during the making of this movie?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I mean, not that he died, but that they implemented that into the film.
Well, I don't know.
Stuff really happens.
I don't know if that was something that was added to the script afterwards, or just like a really ridiculous coincidence where they were actually filming it and then the actual event like took place. But that's something that I'd never heard about Top Gun before, so I just figured we'd share that with everybody. So
maybe he knew government secrets.
I don't know. I don't know if there's enough evidence there to implicate a conspiracy, but
the Top Gun Files.
Yeah, so that'll be the sequel. So let's move on to Days of Thunder. This is from 1990, also produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, and also directed by Tony Scott, and also starring Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
this one. How about Pat? Again, what did you think about Days of Thunder?
I mean, you just mentioned a Top Gun sequel a couple seconds ago. I say if Cole Trickle's name was Pete Mitchell, this would be a sequel to Top Gun. It's almost like part for part. If you broke it down, you could just make like a link back to Top Gun. Like, even Tyler, you're talking about earlier, like, oh, here's Tom Cruise running in on a motorcycle. Like, yep, that happens in this movie as well. He's just
Danger Zone.
Yeah, he's just supposed to be like this badass that's, you know, good with driving a car.
Yeah, a hotshot pilot, but this time a vehicle.
Just longer hair.
You know, I mean, the similarities are almost innumerable.
Yeah,
I guess. That being said, overall, what I thought about the movie, I don't know. Like, this movie, I think I just, when we were done watching it, I called it silly. It's just kind of silly. Like, stuff that happens in it just normally, you just kind of sit there like, what? That's kind of dumb. Like, like the wheelchair, when they're racing wheelchairs, like after they've both gotten like spinal cord damage or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yep. Are you serious?
Their brains are bruised and they're like tearing through a hospital in wheelchairs, banging against people, like outrunning orderlies on foot.
Yeah. When, another race part, when they get the rental cars and they just decide to like take them out on the beach and crash them into things and just like do things you don't normally do with rental cars. I don't know. It's, you know, I would just say skip it, to be honest with you. Just see Top Gun and just don't waste your time with Days of Thunder. It's just not, it's not anything different, and it's, and in that regard, it's not really anything worth seeing.
I would say if you had to pick one movie, definitely see Top Gun.
Yeah.
But Tyler, what did you think about Days of Thunder?
Again, we see like all the characters. Yeah, Pat's right, where it's almost exactly like Top Gun. It's the same formula. It's the same archetype. It's the same type of characters. You know, we've established that Tom Cruise is a badass and he rides in. We've established that Robert Duvall's character has some history and that he's going to be like this Mickey character to, you know, Tom Cruise's Sylvester Stallone Rocky character.
Right.
And we have the bad guy initially turned into a friend, and then, you know, Cary Elwes's character could be considered Russia. I don't know. but, you know, I'm not really a NASCAR fan. I'm kind of a race car fan because my grandpa's really into race cars, and he worked in race cars, like sprint cars and stuff, not stock cars.
Sure.
So I kind of enjoyed it for that. Although I didn't enjoy how he knew nothing about stock car racing, and he just watched it on ESPN, and I'm supposed to believe that he wins the quote-unquote Super Bowl of NASCAR racing in this movie, in the spans of a year or so, or whatever. That I didn't like. As far as the other movie, I mean, if you enjoy Top Gun and you like NASCAR or just a movie like Top Gun, you're going to like Days of Thunder. It's the same exact... It's almost, I mean, Tom Cruise, he does. He plays the same exact character. He plays like the macho, arrogant jerk who then falls in love, and then he stumbles with his own arrogance because he's hurt or he realizes he's vulnerable, and then he comes back and play, and, you know, finishes the badass character out by winning and getting the girl and all this stuff. Let's talk about women for a second. Nicole Kidman outranks Kelly McGinnis or whatever her name was by like 100 yards. I don't know if you've seen any recent pictures of Kelly McGillis, but, you know, old folks home. Nicole Kidman, on the other hand, pale ivory goddess, whatever you want to call it.
I don't know how you're talking about a ranking system that involves yards for women's hotness. I don't understand your...
Well, I mean, you gotta start somewhere. And just, I don't know, her Australian accent was... I don't know why she ever pulls over that fake accent, because I really like the Australian one. So she was a good addition to the movie. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's the same. It's like the same formula. You're going to see the same exact thing happen, although the ending was pretty weak. Going to ruin the ending. He wins. I mean, the movie's, you know, however old, long old. He wins. But then, like, Robert Duvall's just kind of sitting there. You guys remember this, right?
Yeah.
You watched it?
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, all right, whatever. Tom Cruise is like, let's get going, Duvall. He's like, okay, I'll race you there. And then that's it. That's the end of the movie. And I'm just kind of like, that's not as epic as...
Yeah, and that scene kind of epitomizes the silliness factor to see, like, a whatever, a six-year-old Robert Duvall just trucking it, man. He's like sprinting.
I mean, he was running.
So. Yeah, he was going all out. And it was just silly looking. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, when you have an ending in Top Gun where planes are actually shot down and blown up and missiles are fired, and then you have, like, a NASCAR race where, like, you know, it's 5 hours long, but it's really 20 minutes in the movie, and all he does is just pass this guy at the last second, which I do in cars all the time on my way to work. It's just kind of less epic. You're just kind of like, oh, yay, he won.
Yeah.
Great, he can drive.
All right. First of all, I think you're being remarkably reductive of NASCAR in general by claiming that it's equal to you passing a car in the street.
Hey, I go pretty fast, Ben. 75 miles an hour.
Yeah. I saw a t-shirt online today that was like a Back to the Future themed t-shirt that said, I drive 88 miles an hour all the time, just in case.
Nice.
I like that.
That's pretty funny, Ben.
But yeah, sorry, the ridiculous aside there. But no, I think, you guys have both mentioned the similarity to Top Gun, and it's like comical throughout the movie. Like the way that they... Even some of the lines are just tweaked slightly. Like the "I feel the need for speed" from Top Gun turns into "speed to know I can control something that's out of control." Like it's, you know, very similar dialogue and all that stuff, as well as what you guys have already talked about, the character prototypes and all that kind of stuff. I mean, Carrie Ells, even for God's sake, looks just like Val Kilmer in Days of Thunder. Like, it's amazing. He's got like the slicked back kind of blonde hair, and he just, like, if you put a picture of them side by side, 50, 60, 70% of America
wish.
Would have a hard time, like, separating the two.
See the silhouetted love scenes as well, Ben.
Yeah, and there's that, and there's, like, the comically blue lighting, again, at, like, Robert Duvall's house that looked just like that sex scene in Top Gun. It's, like, the same type of stuff. It's very, very obvious that the same people were involved in both of these productions, and it's, you know, it says in the very beginning that the story is by Tom Cruise and some other guy.
And so he was, like, in Top Gun and just wrote a story about NASCAR.
Yeah, basically. And I was telling, you know, Pat and I watched Days of Thunder first, and then we watched Top Gun. And I was wondering, you know, I said to him earlier, I was like, I wonder if the people who wrote Top Gun saw Days of Thunder and were like, what the F, dude? Like,
yeah,
it's
really
the same thing. Like, where's our money for this? Like... because I would be pretty pissed. I mean, it's essentially the same exact movie.
I wish Cole Trickle spelled backwards was Pete Mitchell. Even, like, the helmets had the names of the helmets on Top Gun.
And that was something that you brought up, right? Like the cockpit. Pat was talking about as we were watching Days of Thunder. He's like, you know, even during that movie, even though we hadn't seen Top Gun for a while, we were like, it was very obvious the similarities between the two. And they did a lot of the same looking shots where kind of what you're talking about, Tyler, where like the in the cockpit of the driver's seat looked exactly like it could have been just a replica of the cockpit of the fighter jet. Like the same camera angles were employed for both of those kinds of scenes or whatever. There's the freak out. There's a couple freak out scenes in Top Gun where, like, Cougar gets spooked in the beginning and kind of, you know, goes insane, whatever. And then because of Goose's death and, like, the very specific mention of the jet wash that Maverick goes through, he kind of freaks out. And then again, later on, he goes through a jet wash of another vehicle and has to, like, he's getting ready to freak out. He loses control and then, like, kind of comes out of it at the very end. And, like, the same exact thing happens in Days of Thunder with the crash in the beginning where the same camera angles are used as they're going around the turn, and you can see all the smoke and stuff, and he just guns it through the first time and gets into this huge wreck, and he's, like, freaking out the second time. And then,
terrible decision.
Yeah, and then, like, this kind of...
guns it into smoke.
Yeah, this kind of 80s guitar music plays up the second time the situation comes up, and he's like, yeah, and just punches the gas and, like, makes it through, and everybody's celebrating and stuff. And so it's just very, like... You know, these movies are based on repetition to some degree, and, like, a lot of action movies are. That's part of the quote-unquote wit of these movies, is just repeating things from earlier in the movie in slightly different contexts where the audience is like, oh, I remember when they said that earlier, and now it's funny because they're saying it in a different context. You know, it's just, like, that kind of stuff.
Insult our intelligence.
I mean, yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, if you have a formula that works, I mean, if you have, I guess Top Gun was a pretty popular movie, and you're just going to be like, well, let's write a Top Gun, but for NASCAR. I mean, people do it all the time. They make movies based on a more popular movie, and they just try to follow the same formula so that their movie can be just as popular. It just so happened that the guys that produced and directed one movie wanted to do the same exact thing, but for another, another type of movie.
Yeah, that was something I was going to bring up, is like, movies like Sudden Death, the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie set in an ice hockey rink, are basically, it's like Die Hard in a hockey rink. Speed is Die Hard.
Whoa.
What?
Sudden Death. I think it's in a level of its own.
All right, I'm not even going to get into this debate with you right now. You know, Speed is Die Hard in a bus. Passenger 57 is Die Hard in a plane. So there's all these kinds of different things, and that's exactly what you
die
just said.
Die Hard in a plane.
Well, it's like, it's the truth, and that's what... But the difference between those types of things is, like, the same filmmakers aren't responsible for all those movies. Yeah, sure, maybe some of the same producers are involved because they are the ones who are really making the money off of it and things like that. But I feel like Top Gun and Days of Thunder is a kind of unique scenario because not only are the same producers and director involved, but it's the same star as well. I mean, it's, like, so weird that you find something that's essentially just the same movie, just kind of tweaked slightly. With almost all the main players of the production being kind of the same for both films.
I got really pissed at the point where they got pulled over by the cops and the stripper cop, like, harasses pretty much his character.
Yeah.
I really thought that was Nicole Kidman. So I was like, this is how they introduce her character? She's just a stripper who's introduced. She's like, I thought they said you'd like me. I was like, what? She's going to be the lead, like, the female counterpart? And then I realized that she was actually, Nicole Kidman came back as a doctor, and that lady wasn't Nicole Kidman. But it was really dark in the movie, so it was kind of hard to see who that was. So
okay.
So somebody who hadn't seen it, I assumed that was Nicole Kidman.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's...
Else, I guess, did that?
No, not at all. I think that's just a personal inadequacy on your part, but... So one other thing that I wanted to bring up with this movie is, like, Cole and Rowdy, who is played by Michael Rooker, are,
you know, best character.
These kind of, like, bitter enemies, you know, in the very beginning. And then they get into the wreck, right, which I think it's implied that Rowdy was responsible for that because he turned his car sideways and was essentially stopped right on the other side of the smoke, so Tom Cruise smashed into him. I think he, like, did that on purpose. I think that's what the movie tries to tell us in few words. And then all of a sudden, you know, so these guys hate each other, and then all of a sudden they're just, like, hanging out on a farm. Like, it cuts to them, and they're just, like, walking arm in arm with their girls, and they're like, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, they... Why are they friends? At one point, Nicole Kidman yells, like, he's your friend, Cole. Like, you have to go help him. And why? When was it ever established that these guys liked each other in any way? It wasn't. Like, they're all of a sudden, this friendship just kind of came out of nowhere with not anything to establish it at all. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. First of all, the wreck itself, I don't know. I don't remember him doing anything. I think because he was behind the smoke, he would just happen to be turned a certain way. But didn't they both go into the smoke unknowing what was going to happen?
Yeah, but there's a scene where Tom Cruise is talking
about it. Does he turn into him or something?
He talks about it afterwards. Tom Cruise does, and he's like, he says something like, oh man, I forget the actual dialogue, but he's like, you know, that smoke, like the lane should have been clear because those are the rules. Like on a wreck,
right.
You clear it out and you go high or whatever. And then, and what's his name?
Robert Duvall.
Michael Rooker. Yeah. Drove straight through pretty much on the same path that Tom Cruise did. So he was just chasing after him, like continuing the race as if the wreck wasn't there. Like he was doing what he was supposed to be doing. And then for some reason, Michael Rooker got turned sideways, and then Tom Cruise just T-bones him in the middle of the thing. So I think there's like, you know, this movie.
Well, let me
go ahead. Go ahead.
Let me explain where I think the friendship comes from. I think it's because now they're both with concussions. They're both in the hospital. But then the main NASCAR guy says, or whatever, the big fat guy, he's like, all right, if you guys even touch each other in the stretch or whatever, you know, you're both going to be out for 300 laps. So now they've already created this bond where, you know, they can both get in trouble if they mess with each other.
Okay.
And then you have the rental car chase scene, whatever you want to call it, where they prove to each other that they're ample competitors. And so I think that kind of formed something. And then when they arrive at the table and he kind of says, oh yeah, we had radiator trouble. So he doesn't like sell him out or anything or get him in trouble.
Yeah.
And that kind of creates a little something. But then I just think, I don't know, maybe just the fact that Rooker had Cruz around when he was at his most vulnerable, when he was doing the physical in front of Nicole Kidman, he like faints because, I don't know, his brain doesn't register right when he has his eyes closed.
Sure.
And so, you know, that allowing Cruz to be there, whatever, was his tough guy way of letting Cruz know that, you know, they were cool or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there should have been more like a bar scene or something that could have, you know, straight out said they're friends now, you know?
Yeah.
But like I just said, I mean, if you look real close, there might have been like just that, just their way of becoming friends.
Yeah.
Kind of did happen.
One other question that I had, and maybe you guys, I don't know if you'll know the answer to this or if there is no answer to this. Why would Randy Quaid help them out at the very end? Do you remember, like, Randy Quaid is essentially like, he kind of guides them into their spotlight and kind of ushers Tom Cruise and Robert Duvall into where they are and kind of helps them along the way. And then Cary Elwes comes in and he's like the new hotshot in town, and like Quaid just jumps onto this guy's bandwagon, and him and Robert Duvall go back and forth about
you
know, what's right, what's wrong, blah blah blah, all this kind of stuff. And then you know, so Randy Quaid kind of turns into like a villainous character, or at least an antagonist, you know, whatever, through the movie or something. And then at the very end, he somehow, like for some reason, like not only gets himself over the fence to like help push Tom Cruise's car back out to beat the pace car at the end, but he like grabs his whole pit crew of Cary Elwes and has them do it too. Like, I know that they work for the same, like they're both owned by him or whatever, but like, what do you guys, is there any explanation that you have for why that would?
Yeah, I think you just answered your question to an extent. Because he owns them, he stands to make a profit off both. But I guess there's also like a guilt factor involved maybe, where he kind of originally, I guess, discovered Cole Trickle. And so like now he's not totally turning his back on him, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Duvall gave him a tongue lashing, like you mentioned, and I think that might have changed his ways. He called him greedy. See what happens when your greed gets a hold of you. At the end, though, the Mellow Yellow sponsor, that was Rooker's team.
Yeah.
So he didn't. The only thing in that car was the engine from the previous
stock
car. So he really didn't have an investment in Rooker's sponsor, but he did help him nonetheless, because I think he did. He thought it over and he said, "Yeah, I am being greedy. I mean, these guys are on my team." Even though not officially, and he had the Hardys guys on Cary Elwes' team come out and help just because he was in charge and they do whatever he says. I don't think it was a team effort. I think it was just him. Like, I don't think the teams were united, but he just told them what to do. I think it was because Duvall got to him and said, this is what happens when greed gets the best of you. You know, you have these crashes and you have these bouts because the stream flow, whatever their sponsor was.
Yeah,
that
super
car
flow or whatever.
Yeah, super flow, which could be one or another. Because they have Viagra prescriptions on NASCAR cars now, too. That car was wrecked, I guess. And so he lost a lot of money in that. And that's what happened when his greed got the best of him. So maybe he changed his ways.
Already, like, within the past few sentences, you've mentioned Mellow Yellow, Hardee's, and Superflow. And that was one other thing that I wanted to point out.
They're one of the best products I've ever had, Ben. if you haven't tried them, go out and try them. If you have tried them, you're probably already a loyal customer. Ching 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 ching.
Yeah, see, if we were getting paid, then I can understand why you say that, and I would hate
Pepsi,
you.
Pepsi, a refreshing taste over Coke. Coca-Cola, the best taste you'll have over
out
Pepsi.
This side of Pepsi, but
Cheetos.
Yeah, no, this movie
in your
just,
mouth, not in your hands.
This movie like is Top Gun, but with product placement stickers all over the place. Like they must
The Navy is the product in Top Gun.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like that, you know, you took the words pretty much right out of my mouth. They were making a recruitment video for the Navy, so it was almost like a government sponsored thing with Top Gun. Where
don't feel good in my mouth, some Mellow Yellow.
Well, the Navy actually had a hand in helping Paramount make Top Gun. Like they had to approve some of the decisions of like what could be shown and stuff, kind of like what you were talking about, Pat. And for this, I feel like they, instead of having the government back them, they're just like, all right, let's show every product imaginable and get people to pay us for this. Like the budget for this out of pocket must have been like $7 for the production, just because of how much money I'm sure they made on product placement. It was so blatant, like the way that Tony Scott filmed these actual scenes. Like it wasn't just the race cars, where obviously they're plastered with stickers, and the race track where there's signs everywhere, and like the middle of the pits and all that, where everybody's decked out and all this kind of stuff. It was also inside of random buildings. Like he and Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman were having this like kind of heart to heart talk at one point, and they walk through this door, and you can see all these stickers on the door. In like, I think they were in like a trailer or something, and Tony Scott just chose to film it with the door with all the advertisements in the background right behind them, and just cut back and forth between these characters where you could see the advertisements at all times. Where if he wanted to, he could have very easily turned the camera from the door's POV and not shown any of those, but he's like, no, we need the money for this. Like, it's just it's a kind of a pandering blatancy, if that's a word, which I don't think it is.
I think the DVDs were sponsored by Frito-Lay. I'm on Wikipedia, but I'm not sure.
Okay, all right. So I guess that's a dig at our earlier Wikipedia quotes, but that's fine. I think if anybody wants to give kind of closing thoughts about this.
I've got one. I think if you just kind of look at this movie, I always kind of had knowledge of it. I'd never seen it up until, you know, we just watched
Arnold
it. But
knowledge.
No.
Trouble woman this time, Pat.
No. But it's such an anomaly. Like, Tom Cruise doing a NASCAR movie, like, how – it just sounds like it would never happen. But it did, you know? That's to me what I get from this movie, like, just how much it shouldn't exist. I don't know.
It's funny because I don't know if Cruise himself was actually passionate about racing, and he came up with this story, or if he was just savvy enough to know, hey, I can take the story from Top Gun and put it into this sport that a bunch of people will watch. Like, if we turn this into a movie, if it was just a business decision, basically, or if he actually had some sort of vested interest in stock car racing, because they did have, or NASCAR racing, whatever, they did have a bunch of cameos from drivers and stuff, which Pat and I were watching this, and we're like, we have no idea who these people are, but I know that they're famous drivers. Like, if we knew anything about NASCAR, we would know who they were. But, okay. Well, Tyler, what about you? Closing thoughts on Days of Thunder?
They're both incredibly cheesy, but they're both worth watching. I mean, obviously, one's better than the other. But at the same time, you know, they're both Tom Cruise movies, so you know what you're getting into when you watch them.
Yeah.
You're going to see a completely arrogant, badass Tom Cruise, or a portrayal of Tom Cruise's arrogant, badass. And, you know, a storyline, a lady, and a win at the end. So
There was one other comparison that I didn't mention that may or may not be worth bringing up, but I did want to throw it in there. The way that Tom Cruise wins at the very end of the race, he hits the brakes and let him fly right past. It's the same thing that he did in Top Gun also, which I probably should have brought up in our Top Gun discussion, but whatever.
Damn it, you're dangerous.
Okay, well, that will pretty much do it for our topics on that. So, Tyler, why don't you go ahead and rev up the Deus Ex Machina Apple II and let us know what we're going to be watching next week.
Oh, sure, no problem. Here we go. All right, it looks like the Apple II is printing out on its ticker tape, and we got 3 days of The Condor from 1975, starring Robert Redford and Faye Dunaway. So,
okay.
Yo-Yo Ma.
All right, going back a little bit from our...
Max von Sydow and Cliff Robertson co-star.
Nice. Okay.
Would you like any more information?
No, I don't think so.
It's listed as suspenseful.
I think that'll do it. It's available on Netflix Watch Instant, so if you guys want, you can feel free to watch that this week and then listen in next time. Also, feel free to email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of 3 Days of the Condor. Let us know what you think of our discussions about Top Gun, Days of Thunder, or any other movie that we've henceforth reviewed. I don't even know if henceforth is used correctly in that, but I'm not editing this out. So, speaking of email, let's go ahead and read some listener email. We've got one from writer Kirak Zatebe that says, "Dear Tyler, you sound pretty cute. Are you single? Hee hee. Keep up the good work, boys. XOXO Christina Hendricks." And then there's a P.S.
That sounds fake.
There's a P.S. that says, "Review more chick flicks. I haven't heard of half of these. LOL." So I'm confused as to why she signs her name Christina Hendricks, but the email is clearly from Kirak Zatebe. So thanks for the email. Tyler, I'm sure you have something to say about that.
Yeah, actually, no, I am not single. I'm dating January Jones. So just so the world knows. Sorry about that, Christina. As far as your suggestion for chick flicks, I'm going to say no, but we never know what the Apple II is going to print up. So
yeah. Also,
tread lightly.
Also, we should mention that early on in the podcast, Tyler, I don't know if he'll actually admit to this, but wrote one of our early emails in under the name Kyler Hay Durans, and that was clearly us writing an email to our own podcast. This is not that.
Oh, yeah.
So
we
have no knowledge of this person or what's going on. So if you guys are like, all right, they're doing that thing again, yeah, it's not that. So
yeah, we're not doing that. We only roll with that once or twice. I just tried to get the ball rolling with that first email.
Right, yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's read a potentially legitimate email that I actually haven't even read yet. So, okay, so here we go. "Dear Right Around the Ben, Pat Patterson, and Tyra Bran," it says, "should be pronounced with Asian dialect." Wow, that is horrifically racist, and I apologize to any Asian listeners. Okay, this movie... What's that?
Nothing. I just did the Chinese.
Oh yeah. Okay. Great. That's perfect. That'll really help us with our standing with the community. So the subject line of this email says Days of Thunder. So I assume that's the movie this person is referring to. They say, "This movie was atrocious. I would rather watch the remake Daniel Tosh did with those two risky business girls he had on for his web redemption." I'm guessing he's referring to Tosh.0, the TV show on Comedy Central. He continues to said, "Partly because Tom Cruise was terrible and one of those girls was pretty hot. It was, however..."
So underage.
"It was, however, nice to see John C. Reilly in yet another stock car racing film that predates Talladega Nights by 16 years. Way to spread your wings, JCR. Also, I'm pretty sure Tom Cruise is gay." So,
someone else shares my opinion.
And then he finishes by saying, "Hope you fellas had fun with your double feature, hot and sweaty man-on-man Cruise Fest. All my love, Ombre Dingleberry." And then there's an asterisk that was next to Pat Patterson that says, "Pat Patterson was the first ever winner of the Intercontinental Championship in the WWF. Fact."
There you go.
Okay.
Ombre.
Thank you, Ombre, for that email. We do appreciate anybody emailing us.
Oh, yeah.
And like we said, as long as they're not spam or, you know, horrifically, I should probably start screening these emails before I read them just to make sure that there aren't any, what's
bad words, cuss words, derogatory remarks.
Yeah, thank you.
Remarks.
Yeah, derogatory remarks.
Jeez,
yeah,
carry us through this thing.
Okay. Jeez. All right. So thank you, Ombre. I've also got one here that says character name game for Ben to open. This person has apparently been listening and knew that I was going to be the person to choose the game this week. So
a returning customer.
Yes. Yeah, so hello, gang.
Just got tried Pringles.
Just got a hot idea for your character name game. The character is Ellie Rigby. So why don't you know our character name game? We'll do in just a second. But let's see if you guys can get this one. I looked at this before and have no idea what this is from. So maybe that'll be a clue to you. Ellie Rigby. Any ideas? Anybody? This writer provides some clues here.
Whoa. I got a guess.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it Yellow Submarine?
It is not Yellow Submarine.
Ooh, Eleanor Rigby was my go-to.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, I gotcha. I'm a little slow there. Okay, yeah. So Danny Aiello is the lead male in this movie. One of the clues that they...
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. The movie came out in 1996.
Okay, all right. I'm going to say... I know what you did last summer.
No. Ellie's character is portrayed by Angelina Jolie.
Jumanji.
And I would have said...
Isn't that the answer?
No, Jumanji is not the answer.
Are we supposed to... What are we guessing here?
The movie.
You always guess the movie.
Yeah. Come on. Come on now. How many times have we done this?
yeah, I didn't know how to play either.
Yeah, I would have said that movie that she was in with The Bone Collector with Denzel Washington, but that's not right either. Mm. So any final guesses for this one?
I don't know, 96 Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I'm going to guess Jumanji again.
incorrect again, Tyler.
Oh.
Nice guess. The answer is Mojave Moon, which a movie, again, I've never heard of that in my life. But maybe some of our listeners have, so maybe you guys probably know more than us as far as that stuff goes. But let's move on to our character name game and see if you guys can guess that. The character for this week is Ivy Walker. So does anybody have any guesses as to which movie Ivy Walker is from?
Well, have you already given us like the hint of it has to do with movies that just came out last week?
That applies to the recent releases that were released on Friday, September 17th. Yes, there is some sort of tenuous connection there.
Okay.
All right.
That being said, I'm going to go...
Pat, if you say Jumanji, I think you're right.
I don't know what the connection would be to the movies that came out this Friday with Jumanji, but... Superbad.
Superbad is incorrect.
I'm gonna go with Jersey Girl.
Jersey Girl is incorrect.
I'm gonna go with Zombieland.
Zombieland is incorrect. Wow. I see what you're doing though.
I'm gonna go with Good Will Hunting.
No, but I see where you're going there as well with the connection. I see. I like where your heads are at now. This one.
Wait, I got an idea.
Go ahead.
Is it a Matt Damon movie?
No, it's not.
Damn.
Character's name is Ivy Walker. I see where you guys are going. I'm gonna preempt you a little bit. Save you some guesses. The connection is a bit more obscure than where your heads are right now.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there.
Well, because I feel like I've heard the name before. Like, this isn't one where I'm totally out in left field.
I will say that the movie came out within the past 6 years, so that'll be the first. Ivy Walker.
Jumanji, man.
Ivy Walker.
So you guys want... You want
some other
clue? Okay. Movie came out in 2004.
Okay, well, I figured that. Okay, within the last 6 years, I guess it didn't have to be 2004. Okay.
Right.
All right, let me guess. I'm going to guess Anchorman.
Anchorman is incorrect. What's her name? Sigourney Weaver is in this movie. She's not like a huge star in it, but she plays a supporting role.
Is it I Heart Huckabees?
No, it is not. No.
I don't think she was in that.
I don't think she was either, but that's a good guess, I guess. This
Ghostbusters?
Might be,
No.
It came out in 2004. Ghostbusters came out in 1984.
Ghostbusters 2000.
That's ridiculous, Pat. Who would even suggest a type of answer like that?
I don't know.
Okay,
funny,
so
as I do suggest answers.
William Hurt and Joaquin Phoenix are both in this movie.
Oh. Okay. Right. Is it freaking
The Line?
It's the one where they're gay cowboys.
It is not Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, it's not Brokeback Mountain.
That was 2006. I'm pretty sure. The Adrian Brody is also in this movie.
It's King Kong.
It is not King Kong. And the lead in this movie is Bryce Dallas Howard.
It's The Village.
The Village.
The Village.
I was about to say that.
Ivy Walker is Bryce Dallas Howard's character in that movie. And the connection would be The Village is directed by M. Night Shyamalan, and he produced Devil, which is out in theaters this past Friday. So that's kind of what we have in mind. I see what you guys were doing with the Easy A connection, because Emma Stone, who is the lead in Easy A, which also came out this past Friday, starred in Superbad as well as Zombieland, and then Tyler was mentioning Casey Affleck, or wait, no, something.
And
no,
Affleck.
Good Will Hunting, because of the Affleck connection, yeah.
And Jersey Girl, was in that too.
Yeah, so that's kind of, that's maybe something that I think we should start implementing, to at least maybe narrow it down, because the character name game could get really expansive if we don't put some sort of rules involved. So
Ben, it should have been the security guard's name from The Village. that would have really stumped me.
I think that was M. Night Shyamalan.
I know. It would have been funny though.
Okay, so thanks.
It's listed as security guard.
All right, awesome. Well, so that's the podcast for this week. You guys can subscribe to us in iTunes. We're searchable there. Also, one kind of plea that I have for you guys, if you're listening to this podcast and you like what you hear, go to iTunes, go to our page on iTunes and leave us a review. It kind of helps for our visibility and stuff like that. If we're going to get bumped to like the front page of the iTunes podcast or whatever, we have to have a bunch of reviews there. So please take 3 minutes and sign into iTunes real quick and leave us some feedback there. That would be awesome. You guys can also become a fan or whatever, like us on Facebook, and just search the Not Just New Movies podcast there and you'll track us down. So why don't we go around the circle and just tell everybody where they can find more of our work on the internet. So Pat, we'll start with you.
You can find me at the-life-after.blogspot.com.
And Tyler?
The Solar Sentinel, Desk Again, and Geek Tyrant.
Nice.
As usual.
So you can find me at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. GeekTyrant.com, Filmonic.com. NotJustNewMovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast, and you can find Pat and I on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for our show is normally provided by George Chernov and the Bandits. You can track them down at GTBandits.com, and they are also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. For this week, it will be Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone and possibly Harold Faltermeyer's...
Push it to the limit!
No, that's... it's not involved in either of these movies.
Razor's Edge!
So feel free to check out 3 Days of the Condor. Again, that's streaming or available on Netflix Watch Instantly right now. So check that out and then check back in with us next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys later.
All right, guys. Me and January are hanging out. You coming over?
Yeah, we'll see you there in 5 minutes.